Now, earlier on in the show, I spent a couple of tracks from the band Cage. The new record is called Science of Annihilation. You've been hearing the album quite a bit here on Black Knight Meditations, and it's charted quite well here at WSCA. And pretty good timing, because Cage vocalist Sean Peck is on the phone right now to talk about all things Cage and heavy metal. Hey, Sean, thanks for calling in tonight. Certainly appreciate it.
What is up, man? I just left the recording studio recording a theme song for the pro indoor soccer team here in San Diego. Definitely a different challenge for a band like ours.
Well, I got to tell you, that was a mistake on your part, because you should have been recording the theme to my radio show. So you got to go turn around, go back to the studio and record one for me. Sound fair enough?
You got it, man. I mean, I'm getting good at this jingle thing now. So
yeah, they're not.
We're all kind of laughing at ourselves about it, but it's pretty sweet. I'm pretty proud of it.
Well, there are not enough jingles in metal, so yeah, hook me up with a jingle for the show. I'd certainly appreciate it. Now, you know, for the uninitiated, and that might feature a few of the people who are tuning in tonight who don't normally tune into my program, because if they have been in the last, I don't know, couple months, they would have heard the Science of Annihilation record played pretty much every week here at WSEA. For those uninitiated, explain the music of Cage. And, I mean, can you compare your sound to, like, a geological event? Like, is Cage like the heavy metal version of Vesuvius? I mean, is it a typhoon? How would you explain the sound that is Cage?
I would explain it as a cataclysmic event when, like, two planets collided together in the solar system.
Oh, that's pretty good. I like that. Yeah, I like that. That's but you know, you kind of set the bar really, really high with when you say your music sounds like that, because then you got to deliver it every single time. I will say, I think you delivered on Science of Annihilation, because as of all your records, you've put out a few records over the years, this one's my favorite. So I think that,
oh, that's cool.
And I think it comes closest in your catalog. This one comes closest to Two Planets Colliding. Yeah, definitely go along with that one for the new record. Now, before we jump into the new record, let's go back quite a ways here. Back in when Cage was still in its infancy, was there a specific album that you had in mind that you wanted your band to sound like? And of course, this is before you were even recording an album. Did you have something in mind where you thought, yeah, this is what I want Cage to sound like?
Yeah, you know, it was Fight War of Words. That was really... That's why we had the single-syllable band name Cage. I mean, that was a time when grunge, you know, had completely taken over, especially Southern California. And, like, everyone we knew that was in the metal scene was, like, totally chasing the trends and going full grunged out.
Those bastards.
Two bands, Nomad and Crusher, that broke up at the same time and formed what is now Cage. And we were kind of into the fight thing because it was heavy and it was metal and it still had the vocal thing going with Halford. And the War of Words was definitely the blueprint for what Cage was starting to be.
That's a pretty good blueprint, I should say. You know, it was kind of shocking when Halford was out of Priest, and then he came out with Fight. I'm like, well, he's definitely still got it in him. He's got the fight in him, per se. He definitely delivered on that first Fight record. You know, the second record, I was like, yeah, some good songs, some not so good songs. But I'd say, yeah, that first Fight record is pretty damn good. So that's not a bad record to pattern your band after, that's for sure. And, you know, if you're going to pattern yourself after Fight, I mean, then we're talking Rob Halford. Boy, talk about setting the bar high vocally. I mean, is Rob somebody, even as a kid, that was somebody you looked up to vocally in metal?
Well, yeah, you know, I was a kind of a late bloomer in metal. Like, all my friends in high school, I went to high school in Palmer, Alaska, which is really a total, like, riverbed party heavy metal part of the world, believe it or not.
Well,
and I was into, you know, some bunch of new wave crap, and then my dad worked for the airline, so I was able to fly around a lot as a kid and met some of my friends in California. Like, man, you got to hear this Diary of a Madman album. And that was the thing that really set me on the path to metal. And then coming back, all my friends were like, dude, where have you been? Have you checked out this band, Judas Priest? Have you checked out this Iron Maiden? So I got to, like, discover just a cornucopia of just sick, you know, metal classics, which was cool when you first get into someone, you know, like Priest, and they had, like, seven records already out. So I got just a ton of stuff to listen to. And then I was like any kid running around my bedroom with, you know, Maiden and Priest posters on the wall and air guitar and, you know, and trying to sing all the Priest songs. And I eventually just decided, you know, without any training at all, I go, you know what, I'm just going to become a world-class heavy metal frontman. Yeah, I think that's just what I'm going to do.
Well, you certainly, you're off in the right direction, I will say this, after so many records with Cage. I mean, you can still hear the obvious Priest influence in your sound, and obviously even with the vocals and the Halford-influenced vocals. You know, thanks for patterning yourself after quality metal and not the grunge like your friends did back in the 90s. What an absolute abomination that time was. Ugh.
Well, you know, let me just say something. It worked out, and it's a good lesson for other bands out there is, you know, don't follow any trends and just play, you know, what is deep in your heart and what really is self-gratifying, because we got to open like so many huge shows early on in our career before we even had an album out, before we had any label, anything, where we really weren't even that good of a band. I mean, we were opening for Dio, Maiden, Priest. I mean, even bands like Dokken, which we opened for like countless times, were still drawing, you know, over 1,000 people. So early in our career, we got to play just humongous shows, and it helped really, you know, formulate us into not only, you know, musicians, but to become entertainers and to be able to step on a stage with Iron Maiden without getting, you know, booed off. So it was, you know, being true to metal definitely allowed us to shoot up the power vacuum and really get a lot of great opportunities and play for all of our, you know, legends that we worship growing up.
And that's awesome. Being able to open for the bands you admire so much, man, I could only dream of something like that. What led to the band signing a record deal to have that first record released? How did that happen for you?
That's a funny story, because we had an album recorded, and we're like, wow, should we release this thing? And then we had some studio friends who were like, man, no, it's not up to par. You know, don't release it. You need to record a better record with better songs. And so we wrote some better songs, and that was what Unveiled was. And Unveiled kind of took a life of its own. It was a straight ahead mid-tempo classic heavy metal album, and it just, like, some people heard it and then they would call other people, and next thing I know I got some call with a guy with a heavy German accent going, "Hello Sean, this is Klaus from Rock Hard. You are the winner of the best new band competition in Europe for 1999 and I was like, "Joe, is this you? Who's pulling my leg?" And I thought it was
right.
A big practical joke.
Right.
And somehow it got over to Europe, and Rock Hard magazine is like the biggest, you know, metal magazine in Europe practically. And every year they have a contest for the best new unsigned band. And this journalist entered the album, and we won, you know, voted on by the fans. And that allowed us to go to play the Dynamo Festival in Holland that year with, you know, Metallica and Cradle of Filth and frickin' System of a Down, Static X, Manowar. I mean, like, every band you could think of played that thing. And from that show, which was in front of, like, 10,000, we got our first, you know, we got several record label offers, and we signed a deal with a label that was smaller called Omega that really did well for us for the first two records.
Now, that record's been out for 10 years now. How do you regard it now, looking back on it, that you're so far removed from it?
I mean, I'm still selling it. People still ask for it. Some people still say it's their favorite. It has a lot of, you know, I think classic Cage songs that'll always stand the test of time.
Okay, like, for instance, which songs?
Go ahead.
For instance, which songs do you think are Cage classics from Unveiled?
Well, Shoot to Kill for sure. I mean, that one is the best new band competition on that song alone. And then songs like Dancing Around the Fire, Devil Inside. And then we've got kind of a mid-tempo, like, hard rock song on there called Buried in the Box that, like, that got more radio play than, like, any song we've ever done. So there's a lot of, you know, it's all, what we're all about is writing classic metal songs that'll stand the test of time, that, you know, 100 years from now, some kid will be like, going, "Dude, have you heard this Cage Unveiled album? It's cool."
Cool. You know, on the flip side, are there any songs on that record or even on your first couple of records that you almost regret recording or regret releasing that just you don't feel stand up to the rest of your tracks?
I would say no. I mean, we take a different approach. I mean, they're not all like 100% smashes, but there's no songs, I don't think, on any of our records that are considered bad. I mean, we've gotten the standard, you know, media critic review is like every song on the album's good, and you don't need to, you know, it's hard to mention any standout tracks because everyone usually has a different favorite. And like I said, that's been the standard line of all the albums we've had reviewed. So no, when we write, we don't do, you know, I hear a lot of bands, they're like, well, we recorded 20 songs and we picked the best 12. We just record like 12 or 13 songs and we make sure they're all, you know, kick ass. And, you know, if the song is not up to standards, we'll just keep rewriting it until we feel it gives us, you know, the goosebumps. It gives us the hair standing up on the back of your neck test.
Right. Cage has released several records over the years, and you've got a lot of songs to choose from when playing live shows. What kind of criteria come into play when choosing a live set list? I mean, how do you figure out what songs do we want to play live? Because you got a lot of songs to choose from.
A lot of songs to choose from. You know, right now we're playing a heavy dose of the Science of Annihilation album. We went out on tour in Europe, and we had not released the album yet. We did a series of CD release parties on the tour where the first time anyone even heard any of these songs was live. And half of the 14-song set was, you know, seven Science of Annihilation songs. So, and by the second chorus, you know, the crowd was singing along and totally into it. So we usually, you know, base everything heavily on whatever recent record, you know, we're working with. And
right,
that's what's
right.
going on right now.
Of course. Now, do you take into account fan feedback if people email you or post on your site? You know, there's a couple songs that seem to have a lot of interest from the fans when they want to hear live. I mean, do you take that into consideration?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we have a poll up on the cageheavymetal.com website, you know, what's your favorite song off the new album? And, you know, it kind of goes, I'm pretty, because the fans kind of go with, you know, how I feel. And We write these songs from the standpoint of being a metal fan ourselves. I mean, that's why we started the band. We were fans of metal. We wanted to keep, you know, this classic true power metal sound, whatever you want to call it, perpetuated. That's why we created the band. And now that's, you know, how we write is like, if I was in the crowd, you know, what would I want to sing along? Did this part, you know, is this moving me? Am I feeling the metal vibe right here? Do I want to put my fist in the air? And we love pleasing the fans, and the fans, you know, kind of seem to agree with how I see things, and that makes for a beautiful relationship.
Now, what about cover tunes live? Any songs you'd like to play live that are covers that Cage hasn't done?
Well, I mean, we just played the Prog Power in Atlanta, and we played that Dungeons Are Calling by Sabotage.
Nice, nice.
That always goes over good. We also bust out Free Wheel Burning from time to time.
Good choice.
The fast part.
Yeah, I was just cranking that on the way into the station tonight, Free Will Burning. Good choice. Great song.
Those are the only two covers I think we've ever done. And, you know, we don't have any new. We almost did Red Sharks by Crimson Glory.
Great song.
But I sang that with Crimson Glory at the Prog Power, and that was just awesome.
Yeah,
that was cool because
song.
I was talking to John Drenning. He's like, okay, man, well, which song do you want to sing? I'm like, okay, Red Sharks and Mask of the Red Death. And I expected them to go, oh, no, those are already taken. He's just like, okay, yeah, that's cool. You can do that. I'm like, okay, sweet. I get to sing Red Sharks.
Those are my two favorite Crimson Glory songs, Mask of the Red Death and Red Sharks. Great songs.
Well, see, I'm a metal fan, and you're a metal fan, and we think alike. Great
yeah.
minds think alike.
Transcendence, man. What an awesome, awesome record. Awesome record.
I always give that album props whenever I do interviews. You're like, what are your influences? What are your favorite records? And that's, you know, that's almost a flawless, perfect record. And it was such an honor. I mean, before I even started singing, I was into that record. And now to have been on stage with Crimson Glory blasting Red Sharks was just sick.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, on a somewhat related note, I wanted to ask you about an album, wanting to know if you've heard it before, if you like it, or never even heard of it. Given their style of music that Cage does and your vocals, have you ever heard the Deadly Blessing album, Ascend from the Cauldron?
I know Deadly Blessing. I haven't heard the album. Is that with Ski singing on
yes,
it?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I mean, Ski and I, you know, we've met a few times and we talk a lot on the internet, so I'm definitely down with what he does and his style and everything, but I haven't really heard the album. I got to check it out.
Oh, man, you've got to get that record. You will be listening to it a lot. It is an amazing record. Yeah, get that record.
What's the name of it?
Ascend from the Cauldron. The next
Ascend
album you get
from the Cauldron.
Yeah, next album you get. It came out in 1988, New Renaissance Records. It's not even one of those you need to sample. You just need to get it. I guarantee you'll love it. And if you don't, I'll
I'm
refund.
Down.
If you don't love it, I'll refund your money.
I'm gonna email Ski and hook it up, get it from him.
Yeah, and I'll back it up with an email to him myself. Now, since you're the singer for the band, have you ever had a kind of a quote-unquote David Lee Roth moment on stage or backstage?
No, man. I'm pretty much the leader. I'm doing all the media. I'm writing the lyrics. I'm, you know, usually formulating the initial ideas for the song. And, you know, this has been, you know, I've understand the dynamics of what it takes, you know, no matter who's the best or who does what or who messed up at the gig. I mean, for the most part, it's a volunteer effort. So you got to keep morale at a high level in the band. And, you know, I'm also a big, you know, class clown, comedian, stand-up wannabe. So I'm always making people laugh and stuff. And I'm always the one that's trying to, you know, smooth the freakouts of the other people. So, and I'm the guy that's usually trying to hold everything together. But this band has been blessed with, like, you know, I've been in other bands and seen other people. We've got like some of the lowest drama I think you can ever imagine. We have three original members from 16 years ago. Anthony McGinnis, the other guitarist, has been in for like 10 years, and Norm Leggio, our new drummer, we've been friends with him for years. So it's like a super fun time on the road, and it's just a laugh a minute. It's just it's really fun, and we're all grateful to the fans for, you know, coming out to see us, and we just love metal. I mean, so to be in a bad mood doing this is kind of ridiculous to me.
So none of the guys in the band would say at one time or another that you've ever suffered from LSD, you know, lead singer's disease. They wouldn't say that, would they?
No, because, you know, we make jokes about it. Like, you know, when I'm on the cover of a magazine, you're like, yeah, the band's going to be on the cover of this magazine. Then we get the magazine, and it's just me. I'm like, sorry, guys.
Yeah, well, there's your David Lee Roth moment off stage. There you go. You on the cover.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, look at this mag. Isn't this cover cool? And they're like, oh, you son of a gun. So those kind of things are funny. And anytime, like, some guy will come up after the show and is like, you are the greatest singer in the history of the world. And I'll go, well, I'm sorry, what did you say? And then I'll grab like the guitar player and I'll go, listen to this guy, and then he'll say it again. I'm like, see, I'm just saying.
Right. So after one of your shows, where can you be found typically? Are you hanging out at the bar? Are you hanging out with other metalheads? Do you just stick with a band? I mean, do you prefer not to be found at all?
No, we have a policy for the band that we've done since the beginning, since people wanted to see us, is immediately after the show, you know, we go out, you know, to the merch booth and usually give out as many free stickers and sign as many autographs and give away as many free posters as people want, and just make sure that all the people there know that they're appreciated. We, you know, we want to shake hands with them and thank them and tell them, please stay in contact with us on, you know, the website and the myspace.com/cageheavymetal page. And so we're always very active, very out, very, you know, try to make sure everyone knows that we're very humble and appreciative. And you know, that's cool, because every time we put out an album, you know, more and more fans, you know, pick it up, buy it and support it. And so we just played a big show in Mexico, and, you know, we finally got, you know, the CD out there in Mexicali, which we have a fan drawing on. And all these people are buying it. They're like, oh, I'm like, oh, you're going to love the CD. He goes, oh, dude, I already downloaded it for free. But they still buy it, even though
they downloaded it
for free, because they're so, you know, want supportive of the band and stuff. So that's really cool.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people in metal, a lot of the fans, they will admit to downloading an album's best because they typically don't want to wait. They want to get it and hear it as soon as they can. And many of them will buy the record. It's just a case of wanting to hear it as soon as possible. And then they'll go out and buy the record, which I think all of us should be doing. If we download, we should be buying the records too. And it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the cool things about metal. You know, the fans want to have the shirts. They want to, you know, pay anything extra for you know, stuff that's unreleased. And
plus,
like
you want,
if they download it for free, they'll buy it. And it's just,
you want
the cool
artwork
thing about metal versus the other genres.
Yeah, you want the artwork. You want the killer album covers. I mean, come on, metal and album covers. I mean, you gotta have them. I mean, that's one of the unfortunate things when vinyl went away, is that you didn't have those big, huge album covers anymore. You know, they're relegated to just the CD size covers.
That's cool, because one of the things we're known for is, you know, top of the line packaging. I mean, Science of Annihilation booklet, the Hell Destroyer booklet was 30 pages full of custom artwork the whole way through. I mean, we spare no expense and hire some of the top artists in the industry to make sure that, you know, when some dude buys it and he's laying back on his bed and the thing's just blasting and he's looking at every single inch of the booklet. I mean, that's what I did, you know, again, as a metal fan. And you mentioned vinyl. Our last three albums are coming out next year on vinyl, so we're really excited about that.
Now, what label is manufacturing releasing those?
It's in Europe. It's called Pure Steel.
And, oh, yeah, yeah. Are you talking about the High Roller Records? Because I know Pure Steel does make High Roller vinyl available through Pure Steel. And I think that might be their vinyl extension of the label. Because I've actually got quite a few recent releases that are vinyl only via Pure Steel. So that's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're like real big Cage fans, and they asked us to do it. And, you know, we want to work with people that are real, you know, fans of the band, and so we're excited. I can't wait to see those album covers on vinyl.
Oh yeah, the Pure Steel label—they put out some awesome traditional, old school, true heavy metal bands. Great stuff. Great label. Really dig them. How does Cage touring work? I mean, do jobs interfere with you guys doing full on tours?
Well, the thing that's unique about us is like we literally just did our first real tour this May in Europe. All the other times have been like little 3 and 4 date runs, a festival here and there. And we did it kind of backwards. We sacrificed the early success and popularity of the band so that we could all establish families and other careers so that, you know, we weren't like working the band until we're 30. Oh, we didn't make it. We better figure out what to do with our lives now. We did it opposite. We had, you know, full careers going. While we slowly nurtured the band, we weren't able to tour. But now we're touring. Three of us are pretty much semi-retired, and we have, you know, all of us on property. We're pretty well off as far as, you know, being in a metal band. And this allows us, now we're planning on doing, you know, extensive touring all over the world. And it's cool now because, you know, five albums in, you know, we're at the top of our game right now. But we have some of the best songs to put together a live show. Everyone in the band is playing, you know, better than they've ever played before, individually and as a unit. So now when people see us for the first time, the first impression we make, I mean, people are just freaking out. We went to Europe and, like, Rock Hard Magazine gave us an 11 out of 10 for the live show. I mean, people were, like, you know, ready to fall on the sword, so to speak, for us, which was really cool to see. And so now the buzz has been built heavy in Europe and a lot of buzz here in the United States, and it's kind of a good way to do it. You know, we haven't sacrificed the families and careers, and everything's looking good now. And the cool thing is you don't have to be young and pretty to be successful in metal.
That's true. Absolutely. It's 21 minutes after midnight. We're talking with Cage vocalist Sean Peck. So what's the deal with touring the U.S.? Is there anything in the works, or is that just in the process of, well, we'll consider it. Maybe it'll happen. I mean, where are you at with touring the U.S.?
Well, we're actually getting a lot of requests now, which is really cool. You know, after all these years of building it up, it actually makes sense. We just did a little East Coast run. We're going to do another East Coast run that we're booking right now. We have 4 dates in Texas in December, it looks like it's going to happen. Probably going to do another run in the Midwest. And now we're getting stuff requested for us, like kind of in the, you know, Iowa, freaking Nebraska, you know, Kansas region. So it's likely we'll do like 4 or 5 show kind of runs in regional areas instead of like embarking on a full 30-day tour or something. But that's cool because we'll be able to cover all the main spots of the country and, you know, really give it our all.
Well, you recently played some Northeast shows. You did some New York shows. And you just mentioned you're going to do some other Northeast shows. Is New England going to be in the mix there? Any New England dates?
Absolutely. You know, we've got requests from Philly, Boston, a bunch in New York. I mean, people were so stoked to see us in New York. We've been getting for years. People have been wanting us to come there. So we have a lot of friends, a lot of media partners up there. And we have, you know, a full East Coast management team. There's actually talk of a big Christmas metal show that they might fly us out for. So it could be sooner than you think.
Yeah, sweet. Looking forward to it. You know, we've been spinning the new album, Science of Annihilation, here at WSCA for quite a while now. It's charted for several weeks here. When I first got this record, of course, I got a digital copy of it. I didn't get the actual retail copy. But as I'm getting the digital copy, I'm going over the track listing. and I'm noticing right away some obvious, in my mind, obvious comic book titles. The first thing that leapt out at me was immediately was Scarlet Witch. I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's about the Scarlet Witch. And then the next track is Spirit of Vengeance. I'm like, okay, this can't be a coincidence here, because now we're talking Ghost Rider. So that really that really piqued my interest, because I got into, well, metal and comic books in the 70s. You know, I heard Kiss in 78, and I started reading comics in 79. And I've been a big fan of Marvel, of the Marvel Universe, specifically in the 80s. And so anytime a metal band has anything to do with comics, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is great. Even if the songs suck, I mean, it's cool that metal bands have something to do with comics. So I'm looking at the lyrics for Scarlet Witch and Spirit of Vengeance, and I'm like, well, okay, yeah, oh, I get it. Of course, now what I'm also doing is going through all the other songs, looking at the lyrics, okay, What character could this be about? You know, is Spectre of War about somebody? Is Stranger in Black about somebody? What's the deal with this record and comic characters, specifically Marvel characters? What's the deal there?
Well, I mean, I'm a massive comic fan. I mean, you mentioned Marvel in the 80s. I think I have every comic Marvel ever put out in the 80s. I think I've got, last count was over 40,000 comics. I have a whole
room. Rub it in. You got more than I do. Fine. Be there. I mean, I got a lot, but I don't have 40,000, no way.
Yeah, I got so many, it's ridiculous. So I wanted to do an entire album based on the Marvel Universe. I had all the songs already laid out. I mean, I had it ready to go. And then, I mean, I spent so much time trying to hook up with my comic, five people, some of the people I know in the industry, you know, to talk to someone at Marvel to say, hey, this is what I want to do. And it was just, it was so futile, I just said, forget it. You know, I'll just do a couple songs here and there. Planet Crusher is about Galactus and the Silver Surfer. I mean, I'm surprised you didn't catch that one. The Scarlet Witch, that was just a cool title. I couldn't figure out any cool way to sing about the literal character of the Scarlet Witch, like daughter of Magneto.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, that's between that and her association with like Vision. I don't know if you had the Vision Scarlet Witch series back then, which is an awesome series. I haven't read that in a while.
Oh yeah, of course.
But yeah, you know, daughter of Magneto. I guess that is kind of like your main angle there if you wanted to sing about Scarlet Witch.
I kept the title and twisted the story that, you know, another fictional tale that wasn't involved with a Marvel character, but I am. You can expect to see more comic book, at least two more on the next album. I'm already working on Doctor Doom. I mean, that's all.
Oh, that's sweet. You know, I admit I totally did not pick up on Planet Crusher, and of course, now that I think about it, when you mention Harold, of course that's Silver Surfer. So damn, I didn't catch on.
It says his skin, it gleams like a pearl. I mean, come on.
Nah, man, that totally went right over my head. And Silver Surfer is, even before it became fashionable to like Silver Surfer, I mean, I he's awesome. Actually, let's talk about Silver Surfer real quick. Do you have a favorite? So, do you prefer Mobius or Jack Kirby? I mean, when it comes to the Surfer, do you have a preference?
Surfer's my favorite all-time character. I mean, I really love the Ron Lim era. I mean, he wasn't like the greatest artist, but that whole Thanos run of, you know, what was going on with the Surfer was just, I couldn't wait for each comic to come out. So I kind of have an affinity, you know, for that era, you know, with the Infinity Gauntlet and that whole thing. But yeah, I mean, being a big comic nerd, it's cool because, you know, the Comic Con's here in San Diego where I live. And
again, rub it in. I never get to go.
it is so out of control crowded, though. I mean, I had prepaid for the opening day, you know, Thursday. I drove down there at 6 a.m. and there was a line of people like 10 miles. I mean, not even exaggerating. It was like, you know, I expected like a ridiculously long line, and then I just drove by the line and I just kept driving and said, not standing in that line, and I just drove home.
You know, just
it's totally out of control, man. And people bring like little babies and strollers and people in wheelchairs, and they just get just completely crushed in the hallway. It's so ridiculous.
Well, just like metal, you know, the comic fans and us fellow geeks out there, we're just as crazy about metal and science fiction and fantasy as we are about metal. So yeah, it's like a long line waiting to get into a venue to see a show. You know, I don't think it's that different at all. I think very cool, of course.
1 year. We did a huge big concert during the Comic-Con at one of the big venues down there that we put together, and we decorated. It was crazy. It was a good time. We had a booth at the con, and so that was during the unveil. It was like, I think it was in either 2000 or 99, and we just sold a ton of unveil copies, and we were on a loudspeaker. We had, you know, booth bands. We had the whole thing. We were like, all the other comic people were like, holy mackerel. You know, we did the full heavy metal party style, and it was we were like a spectacle of the whole thing. I was hung out with Dee Snider and frickin' Danzig down there, and I got a lot of Comic-Con stories, but I don't think we have time for that.
I'd love to talk about them at some point, but yeah, I guess we could be here for quite a while. you mentioned that you were trying to lobby Marvel Comics to do something with them. What exactly did you have in mind? I mean, did you want to use some of their artwork for the songs that you were writing? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted a classic album cover with all the heroes there, on the cover, that I was singing about. And the cool thing that I wanted to do, because we have that song King Diamond, I was going to put all the Marvel characters up there and King Diamond, too, with the King Diamond. I was going to throw the King Diamond song on it, which would have been cool to see King Diamond, like, standing next to the Hulk and Captain America and stuff.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
But, again, it was just such a, it was such a quagmire of bureaucracy. I mean, I was talking to people at Marvel, and they're like, oh, we can't get any response. I'm like, the hell with it,
That's too bad, because that would have been pretty damn cool. I mean,
that would have been badass.
I mean, yeah, and have you heard the Iced Earth album, The Dark Saga?
Yeah, I mean, that's because, where I first found out about Iced Earth, was at the Comic-Con when they were at the booth.
Yeah, and because actually John Schaefer of Iced Earth, when he was trying to do something with Image Comics and Todd McFarlane with The Spawn, he ran into a similar situation, he said, where, he was supposed to be involved more, and then it just wound up being one picture for the album artwork that they used. That's what it wound up being. They were trying to get so much more and in negotiations for so much more. And then, I guess, bureaucracy, red tape, whatever it is, it wound up being one picture. So, man, I want there to be more crossover between, the comic world and the metal world. I think they go together perfectly. So
I don't know why, that's why I did that whole The Hell Destroyer, concept. I was talking to several different companies about putting that out as a graphic novel. Our original idea was that was going to be a comic with the CD. And my artist, which is, he's doing stuff for Image right now, he just was too slow, man. I mean, so I just, instead of being able to put out the whole book, I just, put the pictures that he had done, in it and kind of made it like, more of a narrative along with the artwork. But that was the initial idea. You want to talk about a crossover? I mean, I was talking to some big labels about packaging up the comic book shrink wrapped with the CD, and putting that out.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes, the crossover may not be as completely massive as you might think. I mean, I remember Megadeth had a two-track sampler in a comic, to promote one of their records. Of course, they went on to put out an actual comic based on the lyrics of their old songs. I don't know if you ever read it. It's called Cryptic Writings of Megadeth. It's actually pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it could just be, like throwing in some songs in an insert in a comic, or, any kind of crossover in my mind is a good thing, and I'd like to see it more. I'd actually like to see more metal bands have booths at comic shows and comic conventions. I think that's totally cool.
Well, I mean,
cool.
Century Media's got a booth there, and, for me, I'm the perfect candidate. I mean, not only am I the singer of of this band, but, that can write, killer songs of, with the genre, but I'm a guy that's got 40,000 comics and knows every character up and down and what's cool.
Again,
what's
rub it
not.
In, man. Just yeah. Rub it in. 40,000 comics.
I mean, I'm the perfect candidate. If Marvel's listening to this, I mean, give me a call and I can make something super killer for you, but I'm going to do it on my own anyways. I mean, I'm thinking, like I said, Dr. Doom's definitely in, and I might do the Juggernaut. I'm not sure. He's one of my favorites.
Well, I'll put in a request. Take it however you want, but Iron Fist.
Iron Fist. I used to love that comic. The
other
one is Doctor Strange is also on deck as a possibility.
Oh, that would be perfect for metal. Doctor Strange, of course. But
Sorcerer Supreme or the Master of Mysticism?
I got to say, I'm looking forward to the new Thor movie. Of course, Thor's been done to death in metal, but hey, throw him in there. But Iron Fist for sure. He's kind of a forgotten character, and I think with that literal Iron Fist, figuratively Iron Fist, I mean, I think it's lyrically that would make a great metal tune, and I think Cage would be a perfect band to do an Iron Fist metal tune. So there's my feedback for you. So
all right, well, I'll put it under advisement.
Yeah, if you do it, maybe there's a 20 spot in it for you. Who knows? So Science of Annihilation has been out for a short while now. And I'm wondering what the response from radio has been for the record. And now, when you respond, you cannot use the obvious words like, oh, it's been great or awesome. But tell me what the radio feedback for this record has been.
Well, we debuted in the top 10 on CMJ, so that was good. And I think we got up to number seven. I think we were number seven for 3 weeks in a row. And then we were number, I forget what it was, most added. I mean, the week did it the first 2 weeks. So the radio, this was the first real radio campaign we did for Cage, and it was very successful. I mean, it, you know, the album came out June 6th, and I'm still doing lots and lots of press for it. So it's kind of cool that, you know, it doesn't blast out all at once and then fizzle. It just keeps kind of living, you know, on and on. As more people hear it, more people find out about the band, and more people, you know, kind of get into this power metal, you know, thrash, classic vibe that we have. And so it's been good. You know, I've got some numbers to back it, and the play charts that I get in Europe, we had a lot of good radio response on it too. So it was probably our most successful radio album that we've done yet.
And I imagine you've gotten a lot of internet radio airplay, and terrestrial radio. I can vouch for our station here. We're spinning it, and I'm loving it. You getting any spinach on over at satellite radio? Are they spinning the record?
I don't know. I know that we sent it over there, but I mean, I was told that, you know, they do a lot of death metal and black metal, and so.
Yeah.
I don't think that, you know, in the hardcore stuff. So I think we're having a hard time cracking the satellite radio on this one.
So other than just charting, how important is radio to Cage? And I'm not talking not just in the internet and or satellite, but terrestrial radio as well. It's how important is radio to the band?
Well, I mean, obviously it's cool to have, you know, your stuff heard. So it's definitely taken on more, you know, we've taken, you know, definitely a more traditional approach to marketing the album this time. Like I said, you know, we had a full radio campaign this year, and the results of it, you know, were definitely worth the money that we invested into it. So, you know, before we were doing mostly internet radio, and this, like I said, this album got a lot of terrestrial play. So you can expect to see more efforts like this from us. I'd have to say it's definitely more important now than it was before.
Do you listen to metal radio yourself?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm a real estate mortgage broker, and I'm working out of my home office, and it's just like usually cranking some station every day, you know, and I gotta always shut it down. I'm like, oh yeah, hello, Joe, this is Sean from, you know,
I get right, into business,
they're like, I heard a bunch of loud noise. What was that? Oh, nothing. That was just my. That was my kid playing his crazy music. Sorry.
Hey, Sean, thanks a lot for calling in. I know you got to go. We went over our 30-minute limit here, but I think if we don't stop talking now, we're going to keep talking for a while, probably talk more about comics, but I'm going to have you on the show again at some point. And hey, maybe in support of New England live shows. Hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. I like, you know, I'm into talking metal anytime. I'm into, you know, comics. We're, you know, big horror movie fans. I'm on, you know, comicbookmovie.com all the time, like every day, checking like the latest news. I always look at, you know, what movies are charting. So I'm really into like the pop culture and the film industry. One of the things I'm doing on the side from the real estate as I'm working on some film finance stuff for a couple, you know, big 3D movies. So that's kind of a cool little side note. And it's cool, man. If you want to talk freaking comics and metal ideas, you should definitely ring me back. It was a fun interview.
Yeah, man. I could talk a long time about comics and metal. And hey, it's good. It's good that, you know, not only are you a metalhead, but you're a geek too. You know, and there should be more of us in this world. And there actually are. But it's pretty cool that you just happen to be a guy in a band that writes some pretty kick-ass music. I appreciate that a lot.
Anytime my old lady gives me grief on, you know, oh, you're reading comics or you're watching cartoons, I'm like, okay, let's look at the top 10 movies of the year. Comic movie. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm not the only nerd spending money on video games and comic books and, you know, pop culture stuff. So, I mean, nerds rule the world. The movie industry has finally found out that, you know, the comic book characters and stories are hugely bankable. And, you know, they're the top blockbusters. I mean, there's so many comic book movies coming out right now. It's going to be complete overload.
Oh, yeah.
But before I let you go, I want to say you know, everyone, you throw out the websites. You got cageheavymetal.com, myspace.com/cageheavymetal, and twitter.com/cageheavymetal. We always put up all kinds of inside weird stuff on the Twitter page, so we're looking for more followers for sure.
And if people get in contact with the band, you guys will respond, right?
Oh, yeah, that's one of the things, you know, we make a serious point to do is, like, personally respond to everybody every time. You know, like I said, we're kind of pride ourselves on being a band of the people, and, you know, we want to keep it that way. We're just, you know, a small-knit group of fans that support us, and that just anytime we get an email that says, dude, I listened to your album, you know, that's awesome or whatever, that's just the extra little bit that, you know, we go back into the studio, we're like, oh, yeah, this dude emailed me today, and, you know, really puts the gas tank, the gasoline in the dragster, so to speak.
All right, cool, man. I'm gonna end this with a Cage tune from the Science of Annihilation record. It's gonna be Stranger in Black. Before you go, what can you tell us about this song, Stranger in Black?
That was a song was funny. I started writing the lyrics as a joke, you know, because I started thinking like Running Free by Iron Maiden, just like some guy out of jail, you know, debauchery, robbing cars, robbing banks, drinking booze, and I kind of wrote the lyrics as a joke, and like everyone in the band's like, oh, that's awesome, man, keep that. And I'm like, oh, okay, so I just kept it, and this is, I think, running second on our website for like favorite song on the album. It's kind of a sleeper hit, so to speak. I mean, people really dug the song. We didn't know if we were going to just have it as a bonus track, and it ended up being one of the strongest tracks on the record.
Well, it's going to have to be in your live set. Hey, Sean, thanks again for calling in. Certainly appreciate it. We're going to keep spinning Science of Annihilation here at WSCA, as well as your older stuff, too. We'll be spinning the older albums as well. And hopefully we're going to see you live in New England soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the support, man. Thanks for playing the stuff, and you're awesome, dude. Let's do it again. Cool.
Yeah, let's do it again, and send me some of your comics, all right? You don't need all 40,000 yourself. Don't hoard them.
Yeah, I'll send him FedEx tomorrow.
Thank you, man. I'll definitely be waiting for him. Take care, brother.